All right, I guess we'll go ahead and get started. I'm Jenny Emanuel, and I'm at the University of Central Missouri, and I'm presenting with Terry Galloway from Loyola University in New Orleans. And our presentation is all about starting from scratch. If you just don't know where to get started with your e-journal collection and where to take things and how to keep it organized and how to evaluate it once you kind of have it organized and up for patron access. So feel free to interrupt me. I'm going to be presenting for about 15, 20 minutes. Ask questions, have suggestions, whatever, let me know. The one thing I want to start out with is a question for everybody here is, how many people are still trying to get started organizing their e-journals and trying to figure out where things should be at this point? So there are a couple. Yeah, that's where I started out, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this presentation is because I started my job 2 years ago, and I was thrown a binder with letters from publishers saying, you have free online access to this, and nobody had collected any information. They had just kind of thrown databases up on the web, no authentication information, no passwords, no usernames. It was up to me to figure it all out and figure out what in the heck we're going to be doing with all of this stuff. And so I was fresh out of library school. There wasn't really much e-resources discussion in library school or anywhere for that matter. And so I just kind of had to go out and figure things out by talking to people and doing research on my own. And so this is kind of what I've come up with. The first thing I really want to stress to everybody is you need an open URL resolver. I don't think libraries today can get by without using them. And we still have some libraries near us in Missouri that don't have open URL linkers, and they don't have electronic collections because it's impossible to keep up with everything without one. And you just have to think about it as a new tool for your users. You know, you have your OPAC, and you're just going to have to realize you're going to have this other separate search mechanism, this article linker or open URL SFX, that your patrons have to get used to, and it stinks. It really does, but it's the way things are moving, and hopefully I kind of would like to see the OPAC move in the direction of the open URL with a nice web interface. And so maybe years down the road, we'll be integrating them all together, but who knows at this point. I guess your only alternative to open URL or MARC records and keeping them up to date, and I hope I don't scratch everybody, but there's lots of problems there. I'm sure anybody who's worked with MARC records or have cataloged can realize that keeping that URL record was at the 856 up to date is an impossible task. Data from vendors is constantly changing. URLs are changing. Logins are changing. It would take somebody full time of very boring work to keep up to date with everything that's going on, all the changes, and plus you're always getting new resources. So it's a never ending process. And even though serials and electronic resources is never ending, just updating MARC records could really be a full-time job, and none of us wants to do that. I definitely did not, and that's why I really want to stress open URL, because it puts the content in the hands of the vendors. They have to provide the open URL provider with their updates, and so the open URL provider always is up to date. Now, there might be a lag there, but it's going to be a lot faster than you would be if you were updating MARC records and having to hear the information secondhand of when a URL changes or whatever. Uncovering what you pay for, a big thing I have is communication is key. I don't think being an electronic resources or services librarian can be done without communication. And I know people at other libraries who have just tried to kind of sit back passively and let everything come to them, but you really have to communicate with everybody around you. That includes vendors and publishers. When they make a change, you need to know about it. You need to make sure that they know that you're out there to be notified of it. I can't stress that enough because they're going to be your first line of defense. Your acquisitions department in your library, when something new is acquired, you've got to make sure that you're in on the loop and making sure that they will provide you with the data that you need. That was one thing that I really had to work with. Our acquisitions was just kind of used to putting everything in a file folder and hoping that somebody would come to them and get the material that is needed to make it accessible to all of our patrons. But I try to develop some processes with our acquisitions. So if something gets ordered, I automatically get CC'd on it, and I will get all the information about how to log into the resource and how to put it in our open URL linker and what's out there. Something is free with print, I make sure I have that information up front, and so when it's activated, I know it right away. Instead of having to wait secondhand, and that's not giving your patrons what they need, that's not giving them the resources that are online. And also bibliographers, I don't know, everybody's library works differently, but each of our subject bibliographers is a different librarian, and so everybody orders materials for their particular departments, and sometimes they just kind of order stuff and they don't think about the what online access means. They just think, oh, well, I order it and it magically appears online and my patrons can use it, and we all know that's not true. So I make sure the bibliographers keep me in the loop when they do order something electronically, and that was a big struggle because sometimes they just like to be in their own little world and they don't realize that they need to collaborate with their colleagues to make sure that things are get accessible to patrons. So now we've developed a process that when a material is ordered and it is a print and internet subscription, that I automatically get forwarded the order card or their electronic record. And so that communication is key into knowing, so I know what's going on. And oftentimes it's months before a service gets activated, but it's still very worthwhile to be clued in, and then I can notify the bibliographer when the resource is available. The other big thing, communication, I stress, and also just staying organized. The person who was officially in my job before me was not organized, and I was pulling together things from tons of different resources, folders, files, binders. You can't do that. And I created a database, which we're going to look at later, and really kept all the information that I needed because I didn't have an ERMS. When I started, ERMSs were a brand new thing, and I knew I needed to track all this information, the passwords, the logins, our proxy server information, what years the licensing covered, and everything. And so I had to get that organized. I had to develop a process that worked for me, and it's going to be different for everybody out there, but developing a database, something that you can keep track of without having huge amounts of paper to have to sort through whenever somebody needs information, is definitely worthwhile. If you do have an ERMS, and you're very lucky, and because a lot of that information can be stored in there, and we're just making that transition to an ERMS, so my life will get easier. But it's staying organized is the big thing. Licensing, you need to keep track of licenses. I'm not going to talk too much about this because that's an area my library has been really weak in. We're just now getting a standard license up and organized and through our university council, and it's been a big problem. But for now, I keep a note of where the licensing information is for every resource that we have. And that's kind of been hit or miss. And so in the upcoming year, that's going to be my big push, is to get licenses online and in our ERMS and outline the standards for every single resource that we have and hopefully make them available to patrons. But that's going to be a huge project. USHA statistics, my partner Terry is going to be talking a lot more about that. But I make sure I keep records of how to access our USHA statistics. We actually have somebody else that does the statistics for us. And so, but that information is crucial when you're trying to figure out where to get started. As far as vendors and publishers, this is one big area you need to be able to communicate with. Always look for a mailing list for all of your vendors and publishers. Some of them are busy, some of them are not. Most don't get a lot of traffic, so they're not going to waste your time. But if there is a URL change or a resource change, that's where you're going to hear about it first. And so when you first get on board with this particular vendor, ask them, what ways do you use to communicate with your customers? And oftentimes the listserv is the way they do that. And so try to get on that list as much as possible. Now, there's some lists that are just a pain in the neck. I have one aviation journal that emails me every week about all their new articles, and I'm like, I don't care. But you kind of have to sort through the good stuff versus the bad and just delete the bad as fast as it gets there and focus on the good information that you're going to get. Now, the thing is, your information is the online contact information. I can't stress this enough. Our databases and our journals were all in every individual bibliographer's name. So all of that information would get squirreled away in somebody's office and never emerge. And so one of the first things I did was contact every single one of our providers and be like, I am the administrator. Just send me all the information that you have. And that has helped consolidate things so much, because now when something is new or changes, it comes directly to me instead of maybe getting filtered to me. So make sure that you become the contact. See what is free with print, and I'll go more into this, but a lot of journals you have free online access, and it's just a matter of digging it out. It took me a good 3 months when I first started my job to really go to each vendor that we had journals from, uncover where you have access to, what their terms are, and getting that activated for our university. And we got over 1,000 journals free online access, coverage ranging from current calendar year to lots of archives. But it's worth it to check that out and see what you get for free. Now, a lot of those are changing. A lot of vendors are kind of like, oh, I can make money if I charge extra for those. But if it helps to put it in your article linker and get it set up right away, and who knows, it can help a patron. And I'm all for trying to get as much electronic access as possible. So even if it's going to go away in a couple months, heck, and it might benefit somebody, so make sure you have it. Get to know your journal vendor representative. This is, we go through SweatsWise for all of our journal subscriptions. Our person, our representative, communicated only with our acquisitions department at the time before I got there, and we're tight now. We email probably about once a week, and when I have a question or a problem. And so introduce yourself. Your acquisitions people are not the only people that need to be dealing with your vendors, so make sure you know them very well. And develop a process for journal ordering that includes you, and that's what I touched on the last slide. When people order things, make sure you're in the loop. And this might mean a big process for your whole library, and that's what it meant for us. But it's just a lot of communication and kind of breaking down those barriers that everybody has their own subject area, and they stress just what they do, and they don't communicate with anybody else. So develop processes and work with your whole department. I don't think there's one way of doing that. You just have to work with the environment you're in. And these are some of my setups for examples of setting up and figuring out how to get organized. These are emails I get from SweatsWise. I get them almost on a daily basis when things are added. And before, these were thrown into a generic email account and not sent to anybody. And so this is one I got just earlier this week. And it tells us all the information we need to know to set up this journal. And I go and I use that information. I check to see if there's access, make sure it's years, the same years that is outlined in the email. And we put that in our open URL resolver. And so oftentimes this one we're waiting for access. Oftentimes it'll lag. But these emails help. They keep me busy, but they keep track of everything as well. And so this is just part of the communication, getting on the mailing lists and making sure your journal vendor knows you very well. And that's SweatsWise. I don't know what everybody uses, but I know EBSCO has a very similar thing. They'll host journals on their platform. And oftentimes, if things are free with print or there's a little value added to it, you can log in and get your subscriptions that way. And so we link to SweatsWise in our collection. I think SweatsWise has a long way to go as far as being organized and keeping you organized. I think you can't rely on it solely for all of your journal access. They're trying, but it's not a one-stop shop yet. And so you have to have outside mechanisms to figure out what you have and what access you have to everything. And that's just a listing within SweatsWise, and it tells us, I hate this interface, but it tells us what we have available with abstracts, full text, etc. Then you have to click on each one to find the years, and I don't think it's very intuitive for students to have a bunch of checkboxes or X's, or some of them are grayed out, and it's a pain in the neck, but we're still at that point. We have to deal with vendors, and we can just complain and complain until we're blue and hope for some change in the future. And this is actually an update, very recent update. Another thing is to go to all of your publishers' websites, contact them individually if you have to, but find out their terms and conditions. This is one big surprise I had that I didn't realize Blackwell included current calendar year, well, current and previous calendar year with all of your print resources that you have through them. And so you kind of have to dig for it in the website, but you can find that, and it's like, wow, I get freebies. So make sure you access those freebies. And it doesn't mean much because we've just added Blackwell's full collection, but for a good 2 years, all of our Blackwell journals, we had the current and previous calendar year through their online platform, which is great because they usually have a one-year embargo with EBSCO. So it completes our online collection for those journals. And now if I can figure out how to... I just want to show the database that I use to keep track of things, and eventually this is going to be all integrated into my ERMS, but I have tons of time and need to hire a student worker to do that. But this is what I created to keep track of everything, so I didn't have to keep too big of a paper trail. It's just a very simple Access database, and I haven't really done any complicated queries or anything in it. I just created a basic table. I find out which fund it comes from because our bibliographers really want to know when things are set up. The title, the provider, if it's a journal or a database, where it comes from, what kind of full text it has. I'm constantly fielding questions about that. And if I find problems, if it doesn't include table of contents or editorials or it isn't completely full text, I will change that information because somebody's always asked me for that. Whether it's available off campus, and that's a licensing issue, we do have a few that still are not allowed off campus access. If we have it in print, which has changed so much because we've done a lot of print cancellations. Coverage, that's the most important thing. I don't know how many times somebody has come to me and said, our electronic journal search function says we only have 2003 to the present, but it's giving us 2000 to the present, and so I have to go in and collaborate my data with the data that's in our article linker and usually contact the publisher to see what is correct. And so that's important information. And a lot of this extra information is just information that I use to keep track of things, ISSN, licensing info. I don't have too many of those because that hasn't been stressed, but we are working on that. And the administrative contact information, that's totally needed, and that's the stuff that was squirreled away in people's offices beforehand. And so I don't steal my passwords, but that is just very important that somebody keeps track of that in a central place. Because I'm constantly being asked, tweak this, tweak that, or something's wrong. And end user login, that's something I originally did not keep track of, but when we went to federated searching, you have to have that information. And so I had to go back through all of our vendors and get that information. Contact, if I have a contact that I've used quite a bit to communicate problems or whatever, I will put that email in there. And then how to access the information. If I put in an article linker or not, sometimes we have serial solutions and sometimes they're a little slow about getting new journals in there. And so this is kind of a reminder, it's LexisNexis, but I need to get that information in there. And I also have notes, if I have statistical information in it for the administrative or if there's some kind of weird usage agreement, I put notes in there. And I was very happy when we did get the ERMS just last month because my table worked well with the information that is going to be in the ERMS. So even though I do have to upload it, I don't have to go around searching for a lot of information. So nice. Does anybody have any questions? Yes?
You mentioned email.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like I've stored all the information comes to me via email.
Mm-hmm.
And I've developed this very complicated set of email mailboxes for mailbox for every resource. And is there a way to incorporate some of that email stuff into your database or to an ERMS? I haven't had time to actually pull that stuff out and put it into an ERMS.
Right. Some information I get over email, I do just automatically will copy and paste it into this database. A lot of it, I also have a very complicated folder system, and I force myself to go through that once a year and get rid of the stuff that was really time dated. One nice thing I have noticed about the ERMS is they have a notes function, and so I can just copy and paste, you know, the important aspects of that email into that function, which will probably change how I do things, but right now I keep emails myself. I think it's just part of staying organized. There's a lot of data out there.
In there, you know, because you've talked to several people about this resource, and you want to save that somewhere. Is there a way to stick it in there rather than keeping it yourself? Does anyone know?
We use Serum Solutions ERMS, and there's really the notes function is yeah. about the only place that you can put notes. I don't think that there's a character limit, so I guess you could copy and paste stuff into there, but it's really kind of a small little box. Probably keeping your emails is probably the best thing to do if you want to keep track of whole conversations. I don't think it's, and there certainly isn't any way to automatically put in there from the email. There is no way to dump it into the ERMS.
I would second that. I've looked at that one and other systems. That seems to be the case. It's not designed to be a knowledge management or document management system.
Mary Oaks Galloway, I'm from Loyola University in New Orleans. Can you hear me okay? Okay, thanks. I'm going to pick up where Jenny left off and talk about after you've got them set up, how do you actually assess whether or not it's worth having them? How can you make decisions about your print collections based on the online use that your e-journals are getting and that sort of thing? So I'm going to talk about the problems you're going to face in doing that and why are statistics so hard to gather for e-journals. And as Jenny has mentioned already, the way that we buy them makes gathering the stats difficult. They're not really sold in packages. You might buy a batch of them from your serial subscription service. We're an EBSCO library, so we buy most things through EBSCO, but there are things we can't. We get through individual publishers. And then the format issues also lead into the difficulty in gathering them, whether or not you're getting it online only, print plus free online, or print plus online with upcharge. All those different format types make a difference in whether or not you want to continue to just get online only. Do you want to go to print plus free online? Is that not available? So we're going to look at those things. Standards are not always in place. I know there are some standards developments out there. For e-journals, you're still in the issue. You still have the issue of all the different service providers, publishers you have to go and collect them from. And then what exactly do you want to know? Do you want to know the number of journal views? Is that important to you or not? Number of article views, downloads, searches, IP ranges on campus, off campus. And for me, I love to exclude my own computer because oftentimes I'm the only one searching the journal. If I have a journal that is very problematic setting up, I might be in that journal 10, 12 times, and that's all the use that journal got for the whole year. So I try to exclude myself when I can so I don't skew those results. Why are statistics so hard to gather for e-journals? The volume of them, how many e-journals do you subscribe to? How many do you know that you subscribe to? We're a smaller library. I think we have about 400 e-journal subscriptions. And it is very time consuming if you need to go in and retrieve each of those separately. Too many interfaces. Where do you want to get your stats from? Do you want them from your serial subscription service? We use EJS. It's possible for me to pull out stats just from EJS. I can pull out stats from the Open URL interface. It's just a small snapshot of the usage. If you think about it, people may have started their search in a larger database, something like Academic Search Premier, and they got hit by an embargo on a title, so they had to go in through EJS to get that current year access. So the Open URL really just shows you a snapshot of usage depending on how they got to your journal. Did they go in through your A to Z list that way? Do you want to use the publisher interface? Web statistics, proxy logs, is that another way to get stats? What about if you have links in your catalog? Do you want those stats too? And then how do print statistics figure into the equation? What is the best statistics method to use? So I sat down and we have an information resources team. I tried to come up with identifying the value of the subscription of these e-journals. And what I could find was oftentimes they're the only means of online access to a title. They might be the only means of access to the current year of a title. They might be the only way to get the back file, and perhaps they're the only stable access. Maybe your database providers are constantly dropping and adding titles, so you can't be certain that you can cancel print and still have that access. What do your liaisons or subject specialists or bibliographers need to know about the e-journal? I recommend getting involved in public services. I'm a technical services librarian. I do 3 hours of work at the reference desk every week and 2 hours of work at the circulation desk, so I know everybody down there. I know what happens, and so I have a great understanding of how people are accessing the journals. What information might be valuable to decision makers? And as a result, I am more likely to be notified when there are problems. I get emails all the time. Everybody knows to come to me now. And also, public services is a lot more understanding. They know my process. And so if it takes a week and a half or 2 weeks to get something set up, they're very understanding. On your part, you also need to work with liaisons, subject specialists, to give them a full picture of access, explain what an embargo is. There seem to be more common. I just had this conversation with somebody in public services. They said, I see all the time, and we use SFX, this message that access is restricted to prior years, that current year access isn't available. And they're seeing it more and more often. So you really need to get that word out about how embargoes are affecting your, how that makes your e-journals more valuable. Explain the free with print and the upcharge phenomenon. Explain pricing models for the number of users or delivery format. Is it free with print, online only, etc.? And let them know which publishers you would rather not have to deal with. I have a couple on my list. And when somebody says, oh, I want to get this journal, I know who it's coming from, I'll often try and talk people out of that. So you don't really want it. Getting the collection in shape to gather statistics. Like Jenny said, is access even set up? if it's not set up and the stats are coming back that it was used zero times, you need to let them know that it might actually get used if we set it up. What can print usage tell you? Does your serial spender offer an inexpensive or free product? The product we use is about the cost of 3 or 4 humanities journals, so I think it's very much worth it. What stats can you retrieve from your link resolver? And I was really interested in that because it's an easy, quick way to get stats out. Find ways to use your A to Z list to get stats, and last resorts, proxy logs, and publisher-provided stats. So I'm going to show you a case study that I dealt with, the University of Chicago Press format changes. How many people know about this change and were involved in making these decisions? Okay. We got free online with print for several years, and we got a notice that we were offered, we were forced to choose one of these, 1, 2, 3, what do we have, 6 here, new subscription types. And I needed to provide my information resources team with the data to be able to make an informed decision about what was the best way to get these University of Chicago Press titles. So I'll show you what I prepared for them. So the first thing I did was go out and gather my title list of what we got through University of Chicago in print. And then I used my A to Z journal finder to figure out where we were getting online access. And I went through and highlighted for them all the subscriptions that were a result of us buying print. And oftentimes I've set these up both through the publisher link and through EJS and added in here the stats. And basically what this shows me is only the use that comes through our link resolver. And this is valuable to me because I wanted to compare the use of the current year title. I didn't much care about the use through these databases, other than I needed to know if people really needed the current year and if we were embargoed by our other databases. The next piece was print stats. And I know not everybody has these. I was really fortunate that there was already a system in place and print stats were already being gathered. So we looked at over time how print use was going. Print use seem to taper off as we added the title online? Did we need to keep the title in print? Did we have a stable means of getting it other than the print? And then we sat down as a team and made some recommendations, and I can show you some of our justifications here. And we actually saved a couple of bucks doing this. We wanted to keep PDF versions. Academic Search Premier only had HTML full text, and we decided to just get a single user rather than this enterprise-wide version because it didn't look like it was being used much. Some other places we decided to just go ahead and cancel print and get the online subscription only, and that happened more often when the title was available through JSTOR or Project Muse. We felt okay about canceling the print but continuing on with the e-journal subscription so that we weren't losing those last two, or the most recent 2 or 3 years.
So once we had these recommendations together on our information resources team, we sent them out to the subject specialists for comment. And I think everybody took a look at the stats that we had put together, and there was no fussing about canceling print. It went well. It was better than expected. So, do you have any questions about what I've had to say or what Jenny's had to say? We